Hey there, and welcome to the Smart and Simple Matters show with your host, Joel Zaslavsky. I'm here to ask you, what are you chasing? Maybe you'll find out or take a new direction in a moment. This is episode number 48. Howdy, howdy, my friend. Thanks for listening in to this episode of the show. I am going solo today because I want to share a grand vision with you. And just as important, I want you to help me, to help us shape that vision. I'm about to talk a lot about simplifying what it means to have a simple life and just generally use the word simple a whole heck of a lot. And you'll also hear me ask myself and ask you how we can be intentional about what we do and think. Where mindfulness and gratitude hang out. Why it's so dang important to develop a sense of enough. But not only that, I'm also bursting at the seams to discuss how to slow down and how to come to a complete stop. How to be consumed with something other than consumption. What a community of simple living enthusiasts can do if they put their hearts, their minds, and their spirits into changing our systems to make the simple choice the default one. All these things I just mentioned, they are pillars of something I'm helping to build, and that would be Simple Rev. As of publishing this episode in mid-May 2014, Simple Rev has so far, it's just been about the upcoming Simplicity-themed event in Minneapolis, Minnesota on October 3rd and 4th. And the first ever Simple Rev gathering it's going to be a big honkin' deal, I assure you. You can find out more about it at simplerev.com if you'd like. But I'm more focused today on the vision beyond the 200-plus Simple Living folks having 2 days of intense workshops and a ton of fun. Because really, I'd like Simple Rev to become a full-fledged movement. You know, something that people can get involved with at a number of levels, in multiple mediums, and use to change not only the conversation about simplicity, but the entire direction, and I know this is bold, but the entire direction of a generation. So it's lofty stuff, and whether or not you believe that hyperconsumerism and mindlessness is driving us into a ditch, which I certainly do, there is going to be a lot in this episode for you. Now, just to be clear, I am not Simple Rev. Now, I may have shared the initial vision for it, and I'm sharing a refreshed version of that vision with you now, but I'm not calling the shots. I wouldn't want to, even if I could. Dan Hayes of Simple Life Together is co-organizing the inaugural event and providing an amazing perspective that anyone can get on board with. I've got folks like Joshua Becker of Becoming Minimalist as an advisor, and he's also going to be a presenter and workshop leader in October, really a guiding force for populist minimalism. Andrea Imsdahl of The Collective Giving Tree has given Simple Rev a much, much needed boost from a branding, social media, and behind the scenes perspective. More folks just like you, I mean, heck, even you yourself, I hope at least, are getting involved with Simple Rev in a number of ways. I'm grateful. I'm motivated. I'm just motivated as all get up. But before I share a Simple Rev vision put together by a host of inspiring people, I want to give you a little bit of context. So first of all, it's no secret that I'm friends and a huge fan of Scott Dinsmore at liveyourlegend.net. On December 3rd, 2013, Scott did a webinar with another guy I have a ton of respect for, and that would be Jonathan Fields, about how to start a nonviolent revolution using the principles of someone you've probably never heard of before. I know I certainly never heard of this dude before, but he is phenomenal in his own right. The guy's name is Gene Sharp. And I'm going to link to Gene's Wikipedia page in the show notes, but he's a 3-time Nobel Peace Prize nominee and author of a dozen books, including one which I think just blows up a ton of paradigms. It's called From Dictatorship to Democracy. Gene's words and work are so powerful that just possessing one of his books in certain oppressive countries, it will get you thrown in jail. That's nuts. But Jonathan studied Gene's work for years, and he used it to answer one huge question, and it was this. Can the core ideas from Gene Sharp's Political Revolution Roadmap be applied outside of politics? You know, perhaps in a brand or, say, a simple living movement context? It turns out the answer is a resounding yes. So Jonathan created these 18 steps for anyone to walk through if they wanted to create their own movement in any possible sphere. And he covered them in the webinar I saw along with Scott Dinsmore, and I'm sure he expands upon them heavily. He's got this course. It's called Revolution U, which I'll link to that in the show notes too, because I hear it is awesome. I'm not going to cover all of these 18 steps in this podcast episode because I got to tell you, it would take too long. And I'm going to have to give you the nutshell version of some of the steps I do cover because they're too elaborate to elaborate on without a ton of context. But we're going to dig into this together. And as we do, I want you to think about how you'd improve or reframe the Simple Rev vision. I definitely don't have everything figured out, and I'm really happy to make things better by knowing your insight. Okay, step one in this 18-step process is the biggie, and it is, who is your revolution serving? Jonathan goes through talking about defining your avatars. Other people who have done branding exercises before might have heard about customer personas or clients. What does their day-to-day life look like? You know, what are their fears, their needs, desires, and strengths? And you're encouraged to name them, to create a day in their life. I've never done this kind of exercise before. Not when I created Value of Simple, not back when I had my start to blogging on Enlightened Resource Management in November 2010. But I got to tell you, I wanted to do this upright. So I went it all in on just this first step for almost 2 days. And I created three avatars. The first one was a woman named Amira, who in short is the traveling yoga instructor, also known as somebody who's drinking the Simple Living Kool-Aid. She's 28, female, of course, not in any relationships, doesn't have any kids, is living in Sydney, Australia, just in a tiny little apartment, not a ton of education, just went through high school, and she's now a yoga instructor and a mindfulness coach. Now, you might be wondering already, why am I giving you all this information? I'm not going to break down every single component of it, but this is the kind of look and the depth that I'm trying to get inside the minds of people who I'm trying to catch at various stages in their simple living journey, or even before they even begin it. So Amira, it took her a couple years to put these new thoughts into action and to get her certification, but she's been traveling around the world and offering holistic health one-on-one to a lot of really well-off people and also she does it communally in public spaces for donations because she just loves the commons and giving back to them. She's at least culturally very conservative, but she's slowly moving toward a more liberal mindset. She comes from a family with traditional values, but she is also deeply embedded in the history and the world of simple living. She's spiritual, but not necessarily from a religious sense. She's still very heavily influenced by her religious upbringing, mostly in ways that she doesn't even recognize, but she has sensed a decrease the importance of organized religion in her life. She doesn't own a cell phone. She travels by plane frequently, I should say, and she worries about her carbon footprint as a result. Now, some of the problems that she has, she loves her minimalist and nomadic lifestyle, but the constant uprooting to travel somewhere else really makes her long for a sense of belonging. She wants to be part of a community wherever she goes, and she always feels like an outsider because of her beliefs and her work, her skin color, and the way that she dresses. She just sees the world racing ahead with technology and blindly following these hacks that are going to let people do more in the same amount of time or with less money, which just frustrates the heck out of her when people don't ask why they have the habits and beliefs they do. And instead, they just let these external forces like advertisers or social norms shape their lives invisibly. You know, all of the assumptions that people make when she tells them that she's a minimalist just frustrates her. And that Another thing is she needs to go online to find individuals and groups that get her, you know, that really understand without having to inquire for an hour. So why do you do that? What's up with this? She really feels that there should be enough people living like her and that she should be able to find them wherever she goes, but she can't. For Amira, the best thing that could possibly happen to her is she would have access to a new family wherever she went around the world. And each decent-sized city would have people who knew about and were involved with Simple Rev, and Amira would be able to find them easily. So that sense of belonging and community that she really, really longs for, wherever she travels, she wants it to help make up for her lack of family support back home. She's tried online communities. It just doesn't provide the depth of connection that Amira wants, and it's just not active enough. It's not personal enough. It doesn't resonate with her deeply enough for her tastes. All of her requests, all of these questions and engagement, she just feels like it's going to fall upon deaf ears if she posts something online. And it's text-based. And she loves writing, but she really, really loves face-to-face interaction. Amira is also somebody who thinks about the role that money plays in her own life and the life of others frequently. And she doesn't think that it's evil. It's just that she understands how dangerous and complicating money can be. So she's the kind of person who tends to ask herself why money should even be the main currency of life anyway. And why love or friendship or something else couldn't be the currency in which we're trading back and forth. What she deeply believes is that simplicity is something that you are, not something that you do. She really wants to show these other simple living advocates how she practices simplicity so that they have an alternative perspective to a more Western, a more mainstream view of simplicity. Now, if you saw parts of yourself in Amira, even though I'm sure a ton of it is just like, nope, that's not me at all, that's good though. This kind of person, Amira, the kind of behaviors that she has, the kinds of interests that she has, these are the kinds of people who will get Simple Rev and who will get involved with Simple Rev immediately. But there's other folks like this second avatar I created, a guy named Rich, what I call somebody who needs to be to wake up. He's a corporate guy and he needs to drink the Kool-Aid. So he's 43 years old. And he's been married for 20 years. He has 4 kids. The youngest one is 2 years old, which was a total whoopsie. Lives in Atlanta, Georgia, in the United States of America. And he's got this big old 3,000 square foot house in the second ring suburbs around Atlanta. College degree, went to the School of Business at the University of Georgia. And he's currently a branch manager at one of the biggest real estate firms in the U.S. called REMAX. He's been in real estate since graduating college, and he decided a few years ago, before kid number 4 came along when he was 40, that he should move closer to a desk job instead of just running himself ragged around the city all day, and of course, on the weekends too. But Rich is, frankly, he's rich. He makes a boatload of money, and he is as American as apple pie. He believes in old-time values like pulling out chairs for women and having a good smoke on the porch after dinner with the neighbor, but he's overweight. There's too much sitting around. There's a lack of exercise and so much eating on the run, and when he's not eating on the run, he's trying to pursue his main hobby, which is sports. Sports, sports, and more sports. The irony is that he never seems to have time for, or he doesn't actually make the time to ask his kids about the sports they're involved with, or doesn't even make an attempt to watch them compete in the sports that he actually loves. And part of this is technology is what is fueling Rich's life. He can't be more than 2 inches from his smartphone or his laptop. His car has all the gadgets and gizmos, GPS, Stitcher, OnStar, and more. Yet Rich, he's got a ton of problems. He remembers the slow mealtime and the delicious food growing up as a kid, but now he's just racing through his dinner without really, truly tasting his food or having any kind of meaningful interaction with his kids. And he'd love to recreate the dinner time of his youth with his wife and his kid, but the 2-year-old is really needy, of course, most 2-year-olds are, and he always just feels like he's sitting around without doing something, that it's a waste of time or potential productivity. add that to things like he has chronic pain in his knees, which comes from an old high school basketball injury, and his back just hurts like heck because he's sitting around all day long, not moving. But he really feels like he's addicted to this fast-paced life, and he knows that there's going to be some major burnout waiting for him any moment now if he keeps up at it. But he's just impatient with life, and it causes him a ton of stress. He's impatient with the traffic that he's got to deal with all the time, his kids whenever they give him a lip, the response time of corporate headquarters to what he feels like he needs for his branch, and so on. The thing is, Rich is secretly afraid as hell of a number of things that his kids do or are going to hate him for basically being an absentee father. That his wife is going to divorce him because he takes her for granted. He's not helping out around the house. He doesn't make her feel special. That he has these terrible eating habits, especially all this fast food stuff on the run and a lack of exercise. It may literally kill him. And Rich is the kind of guy that I want to go up to and I want to shake and say, Rich, dude, wake up. I know you're frustrated. All this time you're spending in traffic. Atlanta is so spread out and gridlocked that he's spending all this time in his car and he doesn't want to. But he's spending so much money in maintaining his car that he needs to make more money in order to afford it. His kids, they don't respect why and just how much he's busting his hump. He feels like he's just busting his hump every day doing work so that he can provide for the family, even though his family would rather have Rich provide them with an engaged father. They'd much rather have that than a new car when they turn 16 or a partially funded college savings plan. The reality is that Rich is on a path where he might die alone. And on the path, he's going to be stressed and unhappy the entire way. His relationships are going to dissolve around him. He's not going to have anything better to do than just to commit deeper to work and become more of a workaholic and just perpetuate this behavior that's driving everyone meaningful away from him and jeopardizing his health on a daily basis. I know guys like Rich are not listening to the Smart and Simple Matters show right now. He's too busy for it. He's not mindful enough to be listening to something like this. But if he were to get on board with something like Simple Rev, he's going to be able to lose a ton of weight and have his body perform for him again. You know, his wife is going to want to stay with him because she loves him, not just for the sake of the kids and for appearances. And he's going to be able to enjoy mealtime again. These are all things that are going to happen when he slows down, when he reprioritizes, when he lives intentionally, and he's not just racing around all the time. And he would pay anything to get rid of this chronic pain. He would pay anything for an end to the corporate BS that he has to deal with. And he would pay anything for just a little damn respect from his kids. These are all things that he can find from simple living. Yet he still thinks that money is what makes the world go round. And so, of course, he'd rather have more money than less. And he wishes that his kids' lifestyle and needs were less expensive. But, of course, he doesn't mind having expensive tastes himself. Rich is the kind of dude where if you mention the words simple living, he'll just look at you puzzled like, what simple living? What does that even mean? Am I supposed to go hunt and kill my own food and prepare it over a bonfire with a bunch of Neanderthals? And the thing is, he's getting messages. He's getting messages from church where they say that Jesus was a simple man and led a simple life, and he wants you to as well. He's getting some messages that are positive that could put him on a path down a more sustainable, a more healthy, not just for him, but for everyone around him. But he doesn't think that he could do this simple living stuff, not with four kids and a wife who depend on him to pay for all their junk. And he believes that meditation and yoga, it's just hippie mumbo jumbo and real men don't do that stuff. Now, you and I, of course, we know differently, but Rich is somebody who needs to wake the heck up, and Simple Rev can provide that role for him. Now, we all know somebody like Rich. Maybe we know somebody like Amira, but the third avatar is a woman named Martha. And Martha, she's been there, she's done that, she got the badge, and she's the kind of person that you and me and other people can aspire to, that we can evolve into, because she's been through this simple living ringer more times than she can count. She's a vet, She knows simple living. She views it in a very personal way. She can handle all of these related issues with a lot of nuance and context that only comes with experience and passion. Now, to paraphrase my friend Aaron Currup, who stated to me like this, Martha, she's chugged the Kool-Aid, and at various points, and now she's almost critical of it in some ways. She's skeptically checking out the ingredients on the package, and she's searching out new Kool-Aid-based recipes to apply to her simple living. But more than anything else, Martha, she's the kind of just inspirational person that the other avatars could become. And she's a leader. I could keep going about Martha, and I could even create more avatars, and I might, but I really want to get to the second step of this process, which is identify shared oppression or pain. The way that Jonathan Fields frames it, he says, I want you to name the emotions that people are actually feeling, you know, how it's limiting their freedom to associate, to practice religion, and so on. And these emotions, are they felt on a day-to-day basis, or are they beneath the surface? Are they latent because people have just been numbed of so many years with not being able to do anything about it or the status quo? Basically, the question is, what is driving your community crazy? And they gave a really cool case study, which I dig, CrossFit. I'm super into paleo stuff, and CrossFit is really big in paleo circles. And CrossFit's whole thing is that people want to exercise. They really do, but they don't. And that's where they come in. So these emotions, from a simple rep perspective, you know, we'll start with felt. And the first one that I came up with is isolated. This is Amira. Nobody talks, acts, thinks, and lives like she does. And her simple life, is looked upon as extreme when it's actually the mainstream excess of everyone else that's really the extreme thing going on here. Another emotion that people are feeling is stunned. This is Martha. She doesn't get how people at companies and marketers, mass media, governments at all levels, and social norms overpower our human inherent simple nature. And she doesn't understand why we reserve the simple life to the very young and the very old. And then we have other emotions like frightened. This is Rich. You know, Rich doesn't, he's scared as all heck. What's going to happen if I continue on this current trajectory? You know, if people embrace simple living, is it going to fundamentally go against the things that I've been working for decades? Manipulated. Martha, again, you know, she feels that someone or something else is always pulling people's strings like a puppet. And they don't necessarily know how, they don't know who, but they know why. And that is to preserve a very unsustainable status quo. Then we have another feeling, which is deceived. This is Amira. You know, she sees the world as having its prized resources in the hands of just a few folks who use those resources. They're basically just pulling the wool over everyone's eyes, and they're trying to keep it there permanently. So the other feelings, which are latent, just beneath the surface, you've got somebody like Rich, who he's just helpless. He doesn't think that there's any way that he can extract himself from this paradigm that's based on hyper-consumerism and just ramping consumption. He's not even sure if he would want to, because it seems like the world is really hostile to simple living. So he's feeling helpless about it. Then you have somebody like Amira, she's conflicted. She really wants to opt out of this hyper-consumerism and opt into meaningful work without being pushy or silently judging others with her actions. But she just doesn't know if her personal lifestyle changes are enough. Maybe she needs to advocate for and speak up about why simple living should be a core principle in all aspects of life. Not quite sure where to toe that line. Then you got another person like Rich. Rich is just brainwashed. You know, nobody has ever presented an alternative to the system that seemed viable or that resonated with him. He's just totally hooked on this consumer-centric model and has been pushed for so long and with such success that it seems like the whole world is just marshaling all of its energy into maintaining a narrative that, hey, ain't nothing wrong here, folks. There's nothing to see behind the curtain. And then the last emotion I want to talk about is this feeling of being detached. but not in a good way. This is Rich. You know, he's using this intense energy, but it doesn't seem to make an impact. He doesn't seem to be able to influence the people that he wants to influence, like his clients or the folks at headquarters. So he just detaches himself from the outcome and he justifies his distance so his emotions won't get the best of him. The third step in this process, Jonathan calls it, who is your dictator? I love this step. It was really hard for me to wrap my head around it, and I have just a ton of thoughts which are still forming. But he talks about in politics that your dictator, it's a person or a regime. And in the commercial world, it's some kind of a paradigm, a institution, maybe a competitor trait or an actual competitor itself. And the goal is to disintegrate the pillars of power that support that dictator, not necessarily to directly overthrow them. He has this great case study about Wen Hair Care, and their slogan is, if it foams, it strips. So they've named their dictator in that slogan, which is basically a trait of every single hair care product of their competitors. And then they tack on, say goodbye to lather, as their rallying cry away from something, which I'll get into in a moment. But every day, people are reminded of the pain when their hair strips as their hair care product foams. Now, obviously, we're not taking a commercial approach to this. Simple Rev is all about impact, regardless of money. So the first thing that we are trying to overthrow, disintegrate the pillars of powers from, is the system. Actually, originally, the dictator that I personally saw was something like mindlessness, you know, mindless consumption. People who can't define what enough looks like in their wardrobe, their living space, the amount and the type of electronics they have, their bank account. They can't be comfortable with enough or lowering a threshold so that others can have their own enough. Mindlessness also appears in parenting. Like, for example, people who don't mind having TV or another glowing screen raise their kids instead of their community, instead of themselves. Mindlessness in eating. People who don't slow down to do it. They don't remember what their food tasted like 2 seconds after swallowing it because they're shoveling in the next bite. And they don't realize that food doesn't have to be the thing that you do, that you eat as you do something else. Mindlessness in work. People who are pushing papers and they never ask why. Folks who are sending emails without questioning if they need to be sent and how long those emails have to be, how much time they should spend editing it, or whether someone should even have permission to put something in their inbox in the first place. I also initially thought that the dictator here might be the scarcity mindset. And my friend Shanna Mann reminded me as I was telling her about it, she said, scarcity's real, which is true. It's really painful for a lot of people. And going without, it's not optional for literally billions of people across the world. But scarcity, viewing the world's resources and your relationships and everything around you as scarce, that's where hyperconsumerism comes for. You know, that's why people accumulate as much stuff as possible, money, power, status, chasing the wrong things, just in case they go through an individual or maybe even a collective period of scarcity. You know, it's what makes us trade our resources, the prized ones, like time or attention, for the things that we might need at some point in time, even if that point never ends up coming. And if it does, oftentimes you might not actually need that thing that you traded your resources for and can never get back. You know, a lot of people just see wealth as money, but it's not. You know, there's all these different other kinds of wealth that we can trade for something of value. And that's where the abundance comes in, which is the opposite of the scarcity mindset. And pursuing the abundance and non-monetary wealth, it really allows you to engage the world generously instead of selfishly, to flip the default from take to give. But scarcity mindset, that's not it either. Really, it's the system. And when I'm talking about the system, I almost feel like I need to channel Vicky Robin, who is one of my Simple Living All-Stars. She talks about all of these invisible forces and all of these layers built one on top of the next over decades, maybe even over centuries. Our carbon-based economy, for example. A lot of business interests and governments that are in bed with them. The mass media, You know, another person framed it to me as people who buy the McDonald's Happy Meal for their kids, not for the food, but for the toy associated with the movie that McDonald's is marketing for it. Don't mean to pick on McDonald's. I actually know a lot of people who work there and are great folks, but it's this system, you know, all of these forces that don't even know that they're working together, but they make it so dang hard for somebody to pursue simple living. They make complexity and a complicated life the default instead of simple the default, which is what it needs to be. So our dictator is truly the system, and how we can put dents in all of those different layers of armor that it's placed on itself. We can do that, and we will do that. Okay, we're going to start picking up the pace as we get into step four, who's your leader? But first, just to recap those first three steps, one, who's your revolution serving? We have three avatars so far, Amira, Rich, and Martha. Two, what's the shared oppression or pain? Those are people who feel isolated, stunned, frightened, manipulated, deceived, you know, helpless, conflicted, detached. Step three, who is your dictator? We've defined that as the system. Now, as we get into step four, who's your leader? The context on this one is the leader doesn't necessarily have to be front and center. They don't have to run themselves ragged like a machine and constantly be working on their image and their charisma, but it's got to be somebody leading the charge who embodies the beliefs of the revolution. And I don't necessarily want to be a huge leader, and I don't think of myself as one right now, but at least initially in 2014, from a simple rev perspective, it has to be me. I was the one who sparked it, and I'm the one who needs to continue to build it. Ultimately, I envision this as an alliance of people with different perspectives, skills, different kinds of clout, and attributes that embody simple rev. Now, as we get into step five, it's called find or create an inciting incident. And this inciting incident, which is basically like life before the incident and life after the incident, for different movements, it's different things. So it could be the response to a natural disaster, some kind of new research that's published, a video, like a documentary, an event or a rally, some kind of visual manifesto. And the goal here is to engage the most senses possible. So our inciting incident for Simple Rev is the first ever Simple Rev event on October 3rd and 4th, 2014. Everything that we're going to be doing is going to be defined as before that took place and after that took place. And man, I am so dang excited for it. In-person live events are magical, and I can't wait to see what we incite when everybody gathers on October 3rd and 4th in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Man, I'm happy you're still with me. We are getting cooking now, and step number six in the process is identify your, quote, away from rallying cry. So this is, what are you rallying against? What are you trying to tear down? And the goal is to leverage the pain or the joy from the inciting incident. You really want to agitate people, to get them to feel their pain and show it to others and how it's affecting everyone in this really deep way, because pain unites people and it harnesses desire. So what are we moving away from a simple rev perspective? I'm going to give you a list of things, but this is not comprehensive. Just some things off the top of my head. You know, we're moving away from arbitrary thinking and decisions. We're moving away from mindless excess. Following anyone who tells us there's nothing to see here, folks. Move along, you know, just go back to sleep, okay? We're moving away from actions that poison our air and create a sea of plastic. We're moving away from forces asking us to continue an unsustainable binge of precious resources. I almost feel like I should do a spoken word poem about this, but we're on a good pace here. We're on a good track. Moving away from the need to control what happens to everyone and everything around us. Any kind of internal conflict that says it's not okay to invite others into mindfulness in a world of abundance. We're moving away from glowing screens, hopefully, to get outside into the glowing sun. We're moving away from things that numb our spirit and that dumb our senses. Moving away from a narrow and traditional definition of success. Having to own one of everything. just sprinting around from one commitment to the next. Anyone who's telling us that's just the way we do things around here, anyone who's creating all this noise in the world with their emails and tweets and texts that don't actually add value. We're moving away from decluttering just your stuff towards decluttering your heart, your brain, and your soul. We're moving away from anyone who says, just in case. And what if I need that? We're moving away from taking our abundance for granted, from finding our contentment from something outside of ourselves, from the urge to compete, complain, and compare, devaluing what we already have by constantly seeking more. And we're moving away from distractions that beep and flash and buzz. And really, we're moving away from being consumed with consumption. Now, this next part, step number 7, is called identify your unifying beliefs. And the goal here is to polarize people, to make people, as Jonathan would say, make them say either hell yes or hell no. The last thing, of course, that you want is people in your movement, in your revolution, who don't really believe what the other folks believe, or they feel some kind of weak association to it. You want to galvanize folks either for or against them based on your core values. You know, what kind of declaration defines your movement and makes your community what it is? So what makes Simple Rev what it is? Well, the very first thing is something it's a 4-stage process where we're trying to intercept people in different parts of their simple living journey, even if it hasn't started. Wake up, come home, fill up, be simple. I actually recorded a video about this and put it on the Simple Rev YouTube channel, and I'll link to that in the show notes so you can check it out and the other Simple Rev videos that have been created. But a prerequisite to everything else is waking up. You need to be mindful. You need to be conscious of aware of whatever it is that you're trying to pursue before you can do anything else. And once you are, then you can come home. A simple living family is waiting for you. Generations after generations of simple living enthusiasts have been there. They're always going to be there. And all you need to do is just choose it and to choose to be among them, to be in that community, to walk through that door, and they will be there to embrace you. And then once you've come home, you fill up. You get to gorge on the good stuff, gratitude, contentment, the natural abundance that you then see all around you. And you get to purge what you normally fill up on, which is things like your bank account, a competitive spirit, a schedule, maybe even your gas guzzler. And then the last part is be simple, which sometimes is really hard. So it takes a lot of hard work to be simple. Of course, we're going to be changing that by fighting against the systems that make simple living so difficult to start or to continue. But that's why we need to take action, you know, with our mindset, with our tools, with our relationships. Wake up, come home, fill up, be simple. But there's other things here, and I won't do this spoken word style, but our unifying beliefs include we strive to impress Mother Nature, not each other. Well, simple living, it's for everyone. Some people think it's just for the privileged, but it's not. Simple living is for everyone. And you can see this just going back in time. Simple living was good enough for Moses, for Buddha, for Lao Tzu, for Jesus, for the Prophet Muhammad, Guru Nanak, you know, the Christian monastics. We can just keep going on and on. Joseph Smith, Mahatma Gandhi. It's good enough for them. It's good enough for us. Our unifying belief is your worth isn't measured by your bank account. A simple life is at the core of human fulfillment. Value comes from intentional living and experiences, not stuff. We chase awareness, not money. We race bicycles, not fancy cars. We've got a few more to go on here. We're on a roll. Keep it up. I hope you're digging this, and I hope you're getting more fired up and jazzed as we go through this exercise and as we go through this vision together. Because, hey, here's another unifying belief. Ignorance is expensive, but awareness is cheap. Every place is a mindful space if we bring a mindful head to it. Know what's important and release what's not. Slowing down is challenging. Take that challenge. Pursue the immeasurable, not money or power. Be motivated by outcome, not income. Think intentionally. You know, these are the things that unify us. And as we get into step number 8, which is identify your, quote, toward vision, this is where we start to talk about what we're going to build to replace the system, the old regime. And what are those invisible obstacles that are just so messed up that people don't even realize it anymore because they just think it's normal. That's the way that things are. So we're creating a clear vision of the new reality. We're painting in just vivid strokes a giant picture, something that almost feels impossible, but that people can realize. And Nancy Duarte talks about it when she's talking about public speaking and presentations. She's basically saying, what does the new bliss look like? How do you make the reward worth it for people, to individuals, to their sphere around them, to all of humankind? And I got to tell you, I struggled a little bit with this. I have some items here where our toward vision is a world where simple living regains its place as the rightful default and this is a big one here, the most appealing option. Simple living is the most appealing option. And opting out of consumption of complexity, it's a painless process. You know, we want to go towards new structures that incentivize simplicity and stop penalizing our attempts to simplify. From a relationship perspective, from a work perspective, from what it looks like to be successful. We're moving toward media and companies and governments and other institutions that are liberated from relying on and actually thriving from the hyper-consumeristic status quo. It would be really cool if we had some kind of self-maintaining public forum to organize our society around simple living, because that's the kind of world where you get into, and I know this is cliche, but I still love it. It's a world of we's, not me's. So that's step number 8, identify your toward vision. As we get to step number 9, which is build your resonance story, we're starting to get out farther into 2015 and 2016 and beyond. It takes a long time to build a story that really resonates with a lot of folks. And what really helps is when you contrast what is our status quo versus what could be, you know, that new bliss. And you talk about if we don't do insert thing here, then bad thing happens. But if we do insert this awesome thing here, then all of these other awesome things happen. And really the goal of the resonance story is to be the mentor. You know, you're someone's Yoda. You're not necessarily the hero like Luke Skywalker. Your community, your movement, they're the ones who are going to do all the heavy lifting. They're the ones who are going to do the hard work to help everybody reach your objective, you know, not the mentor, not the Yoda. Some person, me, for example, was just one voice helping people get unstuck in their journey. It's not my story. It's everyone else's story. It's our story. I'm still working on this, and I really don't have a good way to sum it up. So I'm going to skip the step for now and talk a little bit more about step 10, which is craft your manifesto. And a manifesto, it can take any form. It can be audio. It can be video. I mentioned a documentary before, an event, for example, the World Domination Summit, which I went to in 2013. I'll go again in July of 2014. Amazing. It could be an infographic, but you really are trying to bundle up into a single thing all of that shared pain. And you wanna make people feel it deeply. You wanna point to the dictator as the source of that pain and rally people to disintegrate the support from underneath the dictator. You reiterate your away from rallying cry and you state your unifying beliefs. And you can maybe, hopefully, even boil it down to a core purpose, a single slogan, almost like Martin Luther King's Jr.'s slogan, I have a dream. So from a simple rep perspective, I envision this to be at least the primary manifesto, some kind of beautifully edited video of people talking about what simple living means to them, how they practice it, how they benefit from it. It's something that will appeal to all of viewers' senses and really engages people at a deep level. Plus, it doesn't need to be downloaded and then probably forgotten about. A secondary thing, which I'm actually working on right now and I'm really excited about, I created the Value of Simple Declaration last year. I'll link to it in the show notes because, man, I think it's pretty cool. And other people have told me that it's really powerful as well. But basically like a digital poster that people can put on their website, they can download, they can print it off. Something that encapsulates the away from rallying cry, the unifying beliefs, all of the things that we're working for and working against in a single picture. That would be really cool as well. And that is in progress. All right, now to quickly recap steps 4 through 10, the last 7 that we ran through. Step 4 is, who's your leader? Initially, this will be me, but ultimately, it's going to be a grand alliance of awesome people. Step 5, what's our inciting incident? Simple Rev 2014, baby, in Minneapolis, Minnesota, October 3rd and 4th. Step 6, identify your away from rallying cry. There's tons of things in this category. Mindless excess, actions that poison our air and create a sea of plastic, glowing screens. Step number 7, identify your unifying belief. Tons of stuff in this category too. Wake up, come home, fill up, be simple. Impress Mother Nature, not each other. You know, a simple life is at the core of human fulfillment. Step number 8, we have identify your toward vision. A world where simple living regains its place as the rightful default and the most appealing option. Structures, systems incentivize simplicity and stop penalizing our attempts to simplify. Step number 9, build your resonant story. That is in progress. Step number 10, craft your manifesto. I envision an awesome video of what simple living means to me of a whole bunch of different folks, and also a poster-like image. Now, as we get into step number 11, this one's called define the path. Basically, your movement isn't just going to be a one-shot thing and be done and fizzle out. You want a sustained movement that it's going to take people on a course from consuming what you create for them, connecting to you and to the other people in the movement, then contributing, ultimately committing to a role, and hopefully, ultimately becoming a leader within the movement itself. Now, this is a little bit raw for me. You know, as we go through the first step, consume, you know, what tiny action can you ask people to take as a first step? You can do a Facebook light or a retweet on Twitter, a plus one on Google Plus. Maybe they can listen to a Simple Rev podcast that Dan Hayes and I have actually started creating together. Read an email newsletter, read a blog post, follow social media updates. These are all just consume steps. The second one is connect. Now, how do people do that? Online forums, social media, an open database of people in your local community who are into Simple Rev as well, in-person meetups. These are all things that I would like to do, and they will happen at different points in time. The third part, contribute. And we're working on this right now. We're asking people to upload pictures and videos of what simple living means to them, what their simple lifestyle looks like, and we'll put that out somewhere public that other people can see. Create a video about how you're breaking down the barriers to simple living and share that with us. Share your story, whether it's on your blog or anywhere else. And as we get into the fourth part of the 11th step, which is commit. People can commit by attending a Simple Rev event, or we're going to be creating a field kit to have other people host their own Simple Rev themed event in their local community, something that I'll be working on with a host of people later in 2014. And then the fifth part is lead. We want people to be leaders, whether that's through an application to be a Simple Rev ambassador, you know, almost like a Simple Rev franchise a la TEDx style in their community, be a workshop leader at an event that it's going on. There's a lot of different ways that people can have a leadership role. We want to put people in that position to take the reins, to not ask for permission, to just simply do and lead. Now that's step 11, define the path. Steps 12 through 18 are, I'm going to go really quick through them because these are out far enough in the future that it's really hard to gauge what that vision looks like. Step 12 is deepen the tribe mentality. Basically, you want to make people feel like there's nothing wrong with them, that they're not alone, that there's some kind of shared symbology, shared language. That's really, really big. Something that I've struggled with, but something that I'm looking to get better about. You know, something that they can wear, that they can say that just screams, I am part of this movement and I'm darn proud of it. So a case study from Jonathan Fields' webinar was Apple and their white headphones. Everyone else's headphones were black up until that point. When you saw a pair of white headphones, somebody was making a statement. There was a symbol right there. And as much as I don't like the influence that Apple has from a consumer perspective, man, they know how to create a tribe around their product. So step 13 is assemble your torchbearers. You know, who are your true believers? And then folks that you can trust, that you can rely on for the long run. And the goal here, you share steps 1 through 12 with them. See if they're in and make them say, I'm in, baby. I want this. I want to do this. You empower them to lead. You give them knowledge and support and tools and access to you, to other people. And now, Simple Rev is so new that we don't have a ton of torchbearers yet. Dan Hayes, absolutely. Joshua Becker seems like a great candidate, but we really need more. And if that sounds like it could be you, by all means, please contact me and let's have a chat. Step 14, identify key resources and allies. You need money. You need people. You need folks to fill different roles. You need social capital. You need influencers. You know, who's going to have co-ownership of this baby? Who's going to have co-ownership of the movement and feel like it's just as much theirs as it is anyone else's? Still working on this one as well, but I've been talking to what feels like a bazillion people about Simple Rev, and I know some folks who really want to help out and are doing it in their own unique way. I have some great resources and allies, and I'm getting more every day. Step 15, swarm the launch. They encourage you not just do one thing in one channel. They want you to do a ton of things in a ton of different channels. So different topics and mediums. Reach people via text, whether that's a blog, a podcast, YouTube videos, infographics, in-person events. Meet people where they already are. Don't try to build some kind of new platform that they won't use or adopt. Just go to where they are and really swarm that launch, as they call it. Step 16, find your mechanisms and milestones, which is basically just building a transparent process to create trust, to inspire action, to make action the default so that you don't have to constantly be sparking people. And this means making checks and public accountability. I don't really have a ton to comment on here. And as we get into step 17, design for contagion, as they say. They want you to leverage every tool to give it the best possible chance to catch on like a wildfire. This is where you use stories, social currency. You know, people want to help others by introducing them to your tools, and you make that connection deep. You make it emotional and observable. And then I like this part. Then you get your butt out of the way. I'm really excited to get my butt out of the way and let this thing just take off on its own. And that's where you get to step 18, which is create the ultimate tipping point. Which is, you have so much momentum, you get further and further away from your inciting incident. Step number 5, people will feel less pain though. They won't necessarily remember what it felt like when they were there, just in the throes of that deep pain. But you got to be willing to lose control of the message. You got to be willing to lose control over the direction of the movement. If other people have taken it in a really cool way, you got to have that faith in the core values and ideas that created your movement in the first place. They take on a life of their own. And the growth of a revolution, it becomes self-fulfilling and auto-renewing. That is the ultimate tipping point. And we're not a raging inferno. We're definitely on a slow burn here, but that's good and it's promising. So there you are, my friend. That's where my head and a number of the other folks that I am co-organizing, working on Simple Rev at, that's where our head is at with the vision. You know, I really want to know from you, though, how would you improve any of these 18 steps? Or maybe even reframe the vision to resonate deeper with the people that you know, or maybe even with you personally. So you can leave a comment, and of course, all the links, all the resources that I included in this episode, you can find them in the show notes at valueofsimple.com/SASM048. Hopefully, by now, you want to get involved with Simple Rev. You want to learn more, and all you got to do is just head over to simplerev.com. That's simplerev.com. You're going to find links to our social media profiles, our YouTube channel, how to get your ticket to the first ever Simple Rev event on October 3rd and 4th in Minneapolis, Minnesota, baby. The podcast that Dan Hayes and I started for Simple Rev. We've got workshop leaders lined up and guidelines on how you can become a workshop leader if you want to as well. there's an easy way to get on the Simple Rev email list, which, by the way, is at simplerev.com/newsletter, and a whole lot more. Now, if you'd like to share your thoughts on this episode or just what's on your mind in general, you can do that in a number of ways. Leave a comment on the show notes at valuesimple.com/SASM048. Send an email to joel@valueofsimple.com. You can always tweet me via my handle @JoelZaslavsky or join me on G+, which I gotta say, it's my favorite social media hangout right now. Thanks a ton for listening to me talk about Simple Rev, and I love sharing this vision with you. Not my vision, our vision for it. I want you to get your fingerprints all over this bad boy, because the further away that Simple Rev gets from my influence and control, the better and more valuable it's becoming to everyone. So there's a place in this Simple Living community, and we're waiting for you. Please join us. It's now time for your partner in simplifying to sign off again. You've just listened to the Smart and Simple Matters podcast with Joel Zaslavsky, creator of all things Value of Simple.